Hello, First Reading fans. My name is Rosie Candelpaugh. I'm an assistant professor at Wake Forest University, and I teach in the area of Bible in the Department of Religion. And I'm here to join you for Summer Shorts, our shorter format of podcast for the summer in which we address the thematic readings this year for ordinary time, that stretch of time between Pentecost all the way out to Advent. We are here in the third week after Pentecost, June 29th, and I'm going to try to offer you some down and dirty preaching tips for this week. I'm going to call this podcast episode, if I can, Commitment Issues, and I hope you'll see why I have called it Commitment Issues, because I see this theme in our first reading and all the way out to the Lucan reading. So let me see if I can try to explain where we are. The thematic readings for this week come from 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 15 through 16, and then it skips out to 19 to 21. If you will recall, 1 Kings chapter 18 to 19 actually take us through the story, a rather dramatic story, in the life of the prophet Elijah. Now, the verses for our lectionary reading address basically a succession plan for Elijah. This is where God tells Elijah, hey, your long and illustrious career, filled with all kinds of drama, is now coming to an end. And verses 15 to 16 basically let Elijah know that he has some final marching orders, and that is to anoint two new kings, a king for the neighboring nation of Aram, and also a new king for Israel. And then finally, a successor for himself, a new prophet who will take the place of Elijah, named Elisha. And the lectionary skips through some of the reality is that all of these leaders will unleash a new period of violence. So there will be killing that will be ensued. But our lectionary removes that portion there, that inconvenient bit there, and goes right to verses 19 to 21, which are Elijah issuing the call to Elisha. He finds Elisha plowing, doing his farming. He's got his oxen and he's plowing, and you know, Elijah throws his mantle over him, which is given to understand that Elisha is being invited to follow Elijah. And Elisha seems all willing to do that. The only thing he asks Elijah is, let me go back and say goodbye to my mother and father. I just need to take care of a couple of things, and then I will follow you. Elijah's response, it seems a little kind of dismissive, but he's like, look, what have I done to you? Go back and do whatever you need to do. And that's exactly what Elijah does. He goes back. He makes his kind of final, ties up his loose ends, says goodbye, basically sacrifices his oxen, destroys his farming equipment, and is clearly now committed to following Elijah. And that is what the text then continues to show, is the succession between Elijah and Elisha. And this is important, right? As we think about the thematic story that these lectionary readings are now offering, I'm going to point us now toward Luke chapter 9. Verses 51 to 62, which are our gospel readings for this third week of Pentecost, June 29th, right? Here, we do have a longer set of readings, but what it comes down to is we hear an echo of this succession plan between Elisha and Elijah. The story begins, rather disappointingly, with a story of rejection, right? So Jesus has his face set toward Jerusalem. This is important in the Lucan narrative. Here, what we are getting is a foreshadowing of the fact that Jesus is now heading into what he believes the mission for his life is, which is to be crucified, to be humiliated, to die in Jerusalem. And what we get in Luke is just a reminder that the Samaritans here are in some conflict with Jesus's focus on Jerusalem. Now, there's a greater background to the tensions between the Jewish and Samaritan people, which we'll hear about probably from other hosts as we think about the Samaritans in these readings of Luke. But here what you will see is the Samaritans reject Jesus for this mission. His face is set toward Jerusalem. James and John are upset about this. These are the sons of thunder, and they certainly seem to call that name upon themselves when they ask Jesus, hey, we should probably call down fire to consume this village, shouldn't we? And it seems as though they've forgotten Jesus' instruction earlier in the very same chapter, where Jesus has given the disciples a mission to go out, this kind of classic missionary example, without extra money, without extra food, just the clothes on their back, one set of shoes, and their walking sticks. And Jesus instructs them right in the beginning of Luke chapter 9 as they come into each village to proclaim the good news that if they experience rejection, they are just to simply shake the dust off their feet. But that doesn't seem to have settled into John and James' psyche. They are hurt by the rejection, and they perhaps do what many of us might do naturally. They want to violently confront this village. They want to show condemnation right away. Jesus in Luke simply rebukes them. But it seems clear that what we're getting is some lessons about discipleship. And in fact, the next three sets of potential followers of Jesus appear in Luke. And these are important, right? Because verse 7 basically has a follower says, "Hey, I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus' response, "Foxes have dens, birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." Essentially, your commitment to discipleship, while commendable, you should also be aware of the fact that you will likely have nothing. You will probably be homeless and you will probably suffer material poverty as a result of wanting to follow me wherever I go, right? Okay. Verse 59, again, Jesus says to a person, "Follow me." And the person says, "First, let me bury my father. Let me wait till my family obligations are done." Jesus' response, "Let the dead bury their own dead." And there's a third set now, right? So as we pay attention to this pattern, someone says to Jesus, "I will follow you," in verse 61. "But first, let me say goodbye to my family." Jesus' response, "No one who puts a hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God." Now, this may sound harsh to us, right? And maybe surprising as a technique for spreading the gospel. Yet Luke is trying to underscore a very important point that discipleship has costs, right? And that there are very important things to consider in the commitment to be a disciple, an obedient disciple to Jesus, right? And I want to, at this point, then also just again, affirm this idea of commitment issues. Commitment is a really hard thing for human beings, and there is a cost for each commitment that we make. For every yes that we give, we often have to say no to other things to make room for that yes, right? Commitment requires serious discernment. It requires maturity. And that is what it seems as though Luke is once again punching through in chapter 9. It is something that we hear in the Elijah and Elisha passages as well, that commitment issues are to be an important concern in each of these passages. And the irony is that truly committing sets us free, right? For many of us that have committed ourselves deeply to either profession or to a sport or to music, we know that that commitment has certain costs. And yet, as we master these skills or become better at them, as we commit ourselves more fully onto the path, we feel freedom. We have more skills with having practiced the scales every day. Our music is getting better. Our ability to express ourselves more free. My years of studying Hebrew have helped me to feel a certain freedom and confidence in my interpretations, right? So all of these commitments that we make, ironically, also provide the way to greater freedom. And this is where I want to point us to the epistle for this week. Galatians chapter 5, verse 1 begins, "For freedom, Christ has set us free." And then it continues with, "The fruits of the Spirit are these: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control." So you may have memorized these fruits as well. And it might be a great time for you preachers to think about an illustration of summer fruit. I know as I go into the grocery, right, all these beautiful, wonderful fruits are available to us. And in the grocery store, we may get a sense that these things are available easily. But in reality, the cost of fruit is a high one, right? So if we think about what the farmer does, it takes years, at least 3 years, for a fruit tree to even produce its produce. And then even after that, for it to receive mature fruit, fruit that can actually be shipped, fruit that then needs to be contracted many years out to grocery stores, shipping lines, all these things that make it possible for us to enjoy the abundance of summer fruit. That takes commitment. And I think that's something that we might consider as we look at our themes that are being provided both in our first reading and in our gospel reading. What does it look like to commit, right? And in this third week after Pentecost, as we continue to live into the gifts of the Spirit, there may be something here for us to consider together as congregations, as preachers, and as teachers. How do these texts help us to root more deeply and understand not only the costs, but also the opportunities of commitment. So I'll leave that with you there, and happy preaching.